This program is provided by lawyer Kyungjin Kim.
Imagine logging on to JD.com, which is, you know, essentially China's equivalent of Amazon, and dropping a fully functional, hyper-emotive, life-sized humanoid robot right into your digital shopping cart.
Right.
And it costs, well, about the same as a mid-range Honda Civic, plus your promised delivery by September.
Yeah, it sounds completely made up.
It really does, like a pitch for a new sci-fi movie.
Yeah.
But that is an actual consumer transaction happening right now, today.
And we're not talking about some novelty toy here or like a glorified smart speaker on wheels. This is a symptom of a massive synchronized pivot that is, frankly, altering the global tech landscape.
Absolutely. Welcome to the Deep Dive. For anyone who loves learning, spotting global trends, or just trying to comprehend the sheer speed of innovation right now, the stack of intelligence briefings, market analyses, and geopolitical reports we've got from late June 2026 is just an absolute goldmine.
It really is.
Our mission for today's deep dive is unpacking this massive whole-of-society acceleration happening in China's tech sector. So we're looking at software capital, robotics, hardware, the whole package.
Yeah, and it's important to establish that we aren't just looking at isolated, you know, iterative tech announcements. What these sources reveal is policy, capital, and product deployment moving in total lockstep. It's a highly coordinated effort.
Exactly. So by the end of this deep dive, you're going to understand how a completely different approach, which is being dubbed the tortoise strategy, is upending the global AI race.
Oh, the tortoise strategy is fascinating.
Right. And we'll also get into how those humanoids are quietly transitioning from lab projects to consumer goods you can literally pre-order online. But before we look at the physical robots, we have to understand the brains powering them.
The software side.
Right. Starting with a massive shakeup in AI software and pricing.
Which is, I mean, it's a complete recalibration of the market right now.
Yeah. So let's look at DeepSeek. The briefings show they just closed a massive $7.4 billion funding round.
That's roughly 50 trillion won for context.
Wow. 50 trillion won.
Yeah.
And immediately after, they put out this massive hiring call, basically doubling their staff across all departments.
Right.
But the headline of that hiring call is what really sets the tone.
Mm-hmm.
They declared, quote, humanity is on the eve of AGI.
Yeah. Artificial general intelligence. Yeah. And a statement like that, it signals a very clear transition. They are moving out of the quiet theoretical R&D phase, and they're aggressively positioning themselves as a commercialized product powerhouse.
Okay, let's unpack this, because I think a lot of you listening might be thinking, wait, U.S. models dominate the market, right?
Yeah.
Silicon Valley has historically been the undisputed king of enterprise software.
Traditionally, yes.
Yet, according to our sources, DeepSeek is the number one trending software for U.S. enterprise first-time buyers on the Ramp platform for June.
Yeah.
How does a Chinese AI model suddenly take the top spot for American businesses?
Well, it comes down to brutal, undeniable economics. DeepSeek's V4 Pro model dropped into the market with a permanent 75% discount.
75%?
Yes. We are talking about 30 cents per million input tokens.
I mean, I think we need to ground that metric for a second. For those of us who aren't, you know, parsing cloud compute bills every day, what does a million tokens actually mean in practice?
Okay, so think of a token as roughly 3/4 of a word. So a million tokens is equivalent to about 750,000 words.
Okay.
That is the entire Lord of the Rings trilogy, plus The Hobbit, and you'd still have room left over.
That's incredible.
Right. So imagine feeding an AI all of those books, asking it to analyze the themes, cross-reference characters, and output a detailed report, and that computation costs you 30 cents.
Which completely breaks the traditional software as a service pricing model.
Yeah.
But the chief economists at Ramp did issue warnings about data security, right?
They did, yeah.
They pointed out that this isn't a model you host securely on your own internal servers. American companies are taking their proprietary data and sending it directly to DeepSeek servers.
They are. But the cost pressure on U.S. companies right now is so immense that businesses are calculating the risk and basically deciding the savings are simply too significant to ignore. I mean, the barrier to entry for processing massive data sets has virtually vanished.
And it scales across the entire ecosystem. The Washington Post and CNBC reports highlight that Chinese open-weight models now account for 61% of global token consumption on OpenRouter.
61%.
Yeah, and four of the top five models are Chinese. Plus, Quinn just surpassed Meta's Llama with over 1 billion downloads on Hugging Face.
Let's clarify what we mean by open weight here, because it is distinct from traditional open source.
Okay, yeah. break down the difference?
So open source usually implies you get the entire recipe, all the ingredients, and the training data. Open weight means you get the fully baked cake, so the pre-trained neural network weights.
Oh, I see.
Developers can download it, use it, fine-tune it locally, all without needing the, you know, multi-billion dollar supercomputers required to build it in the first place.
Got it. And the CNBC report refers to this whole flood of models as the tortoise strategy.
Yes.
Which is basically, instead of throwing all their resources solely at chasing the absolute cutting edge, highest peak performance of AGI, they're flooding the global market with good enough models at drastically lower prices.
It's an incredibly effective strategy. Think of it less like trying to build one omniscient, godlike supercomputer, and more like releasing a massive swarm of highly specialized worker bees.
Because most businesses don't need a supercomputer.
Exactly. Most don't need an AI to write poetry and solve quantum physics simultaneously. They need an AI to sort data, run customer service, or write code.
Right, and they called it competing on intelligence per dollar. The sources mentioned ByteDance's Dubao 2.1 Pro model. It's matching GPT 5.5 in coding and specialized agent tasks, but it operates at 80% less cost than Claude Opus 4.6.
Which is just wild.
Yeah. You can deploy millions of these specialized bees for a fraction of the cost of one superbrain.
And that fundamentally democratizes AI development for startups globally. But there is a catch. Practically giving away compute at an 80% discount requires sustained financial backing.
Yeah, but you burn through billions.
Yeah.
Training those initial models. You can't just run servers on air.
Right.
So how are these companies sustaining this kind of burn rate?
Well, you have to look at the domestic capital markets. The sources detail a highly targeted maneuver regarding China's SciTech Innovation Board, which is known as the Star Market.
Mm-hmm.
They have officially expanded their listing criteria specifically tailored for AI large model companies.
Meaning startups like Z.AI and Minimax are rushing toward an IPO.
Mm-hmm.
But usually, you know, going public is a multi-year grueling slog of regulatory hurdles and roadshows.
In a traditional system, yes. You wait for market sentiment to align. You court institutional investors for years. The Star Market expansion removes those friction points for a very specific class of companies.
It's basically like building a private high-speed toll road just for your own country's tech startups, while startups in other countries are still stuck waiting in line to get onto the crowded NASDAQ highway.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, it serves a critical macroeconomic goal, preventing capital flight.
Okay, how so?
Well, in times of global economic uncertainty, investors get nervous. Capital naturally seeks the highest yield or the safest harbor, which often means leaving the country. By engineering a high-yield, high-growth, government-backed environment domestically, they keep the financial lifeblood within their own borders.
Oh.
So they are moving capital from investors to innovators at a speed that countries lacking these specific institutional tracks simply cannot match.
Okay, so they've got the brains funded, and the software is trained on subsidized compute.
Yeah.
But an AI model sitting on a server can only do so much. It needs a physical vessel to interact with the real world.
Yes.
Which brings us back to that robot in the digital shopping cart.
The timeline on physical robotics is accelerating drastically. On June 30th, UBTech officially launched the U1.
This is the full-size, hyper-realistic humanoid robot.
That's the one.
It comes in both male and female models. And the specs in the briefing say it has 88 degrees of freedom. Plus, it features emotional AI designed for mood recognition and adaptive conversation.
That degrees of freedom metric is crucial for understanding why this is such a leap forward.
Because 88 sounds like a lot, but I have no context for that.
Well, for context, a human arm has roughly 7 degrees of freedom. So having 88 across the entire body means highly nuanced, fluid movement.
Wow.
It can balance dynamically, it can adjust its grip on fragile objects, and navigate totally unpredictable physical spaces. It's not just a walking machine, it's designed as an interactive entity.
And people are actively buying them. I mean, over 5,000 people have already put down deposits on JD.com.
Which is incredible.
Buying a humanoid companion online for the price of a car, like between 150,000 to 300,000 RMB, it feels like we've suddenly fast-forwarded into a sci-fi movie. But the Merix report grounds this in some heavy industrial reality.
It does. China produced 84.7% of the world's humanoid robots in 2025.
84.7%. That's near total manufacturing dominance.
Right. And while the consumer bots grab all the headlines, the industrial deployment is the actual tectonic shift here. The government is pushing 10,000 humanoid units into real-world scenarios by the end of this year.
Like manufacturing lines, healthcare.
Exactly. Logistics hubs, disaster relief. They are stress testing these systems in chaotic, live factory environments, not just pristine research labs.
But the Merrick's report doesn't paint a totally flawless picture. They do highlight some serious vulnerabilities in this rapid rollout.
Yes, it's really vital to look at the constraints objectively. First, humanoids lack the extreme high precision of older, specialized robotic arms.
Makes sense.
A humanoid hand is highly versatile, but it isn't currently going to solder a microscopic circuit board with the accuracy of a single-purpose machine.
Right.
Second, and more critically, processing emotional AI and dynamic physical balancing in real time requires immense onboard compute.
Great.
Because they can't just wait for a cloud server 1,000 miles away to tell them how to catch a falling box.
Exactly. The latency would cause it to fail. And to achieve that onboard processing, these robots are currently heavily reliant on NVIDIA chips.
Which exposes a glaring vulnerability, because the global semiconductor market is experiencing a massive synchronized price shock right now.
Yeah, the physical infrastructure of all this technology is just straining under the sheer weight of the computational demand.
Let's lay out the facts from the briefings here. On July 1st, approximately 20 major semiconductor companies simultaneously raised their prices. Power management chips, which AI data centers desperately need to keep from melting down, are up 15 to 25%.
Mm-hmm.
And memory chip prices have spiked an unbelievable 90% quarter over quarter.
It's a comprehensive price restructuring driven entirely by the insatiable energy and memory demands of AI. Like every time a model generates a token or a robot takes a step, it burns energy and requires rapid memory access.
Amidst this global squeeze, there is a surprising technical breakthrough from Tech Insights regarding SMIC, which is China's largest semiconductor manufacturer.
This is a huge development.
Yeah. They're mass producing 5-nanometer DUV chips for Huawei and Alibaba.
Yeah.
And they are doing it without using the advanced EUV lithography tools that the industry thought were absolutely mandatory.
It is an incredible feat of engineering. They are using an older process called multi-patterning with DUV or deep ultraviolet lithography.
Okay, walk us through this, because 5-nanometer DUV sounds like technical alphabet soup. I know EUV extreme ultraviolet is the standard for printing these tiny microscopic circuits. What does multi-patterning actually mean?
Okay, imagine you are trying to draw a microscopic, highly detailed map of a massive city. EUV lithography is like having an ultra-fine single-hair paintbrush.
Okay.
You can draw the entire intricate map in one elegant, continuous pass. DUV is like being forced to use a thick marker.
But you can't draw microscopic lines with a thick marker without it turning into a smudge.
Not in a single pass. But you can if you use multi-patterning. You take 3 or 4 overlapping stencils, you draw one set of broad lines, clean the surface, apply a new stencil with agonizing precision, and draw the next set.
Oh, wow.
You might do this 3, 4, even up to 6 times. Eventually, the combined negative space creates the exact same tiny, intricate city map as the fine paintbrush.
Wait, the math on that feels fundamentally flawed from a business perspective, though.
How do you mean?
Well, the sources explicitly state that this multi-patterning method makes their wafers 40 to 50% more expensive than if TSMC were making them in Taiwan. It's slower, it takes way more steps, and it costs way more. How is this being hailed as a win?
What's fascinating here is you have to look at the Brookings Institution report to understand the broader victory. Yeah. The report controversially argues that it is game over for US AI chips in the Chinese market. It isn't about raw manufacturing cost. It is about ecosystem self-sufficiency.
Because of the export controls.
Precisely. Due to strict allied export controls, Chinese AI developers were completely cut off from the most powerful, efficient hardware.
Right.
They had no choice. They couldn't be lazy with their code because they didn't have unlimited hardware horsepower. They were forced to create hyper-efficient software training methods that conserved every single drop of computing power.
Ah, So the export controls actually acted like a pressure cooker.
Mm-hmm.
They forged leaner, more efficient algorithms.
And now they finally have domestic 5-nanometer production. Yes, the physical chips are 40 to 50% more expensive to manufacture.
Right.
But when you combine that domestic hardware with the incredibly efficient algorithms they were forced to develop, the overall system cost and performance suddenly works.
Yeah.
According to the data, this combination has pushed Chinese AI chip market share inside their own country to 52.3%.
Meaning they've officially overtaken NVIDIA locally, which creates a nearly impossible situation for the rest of the world. Because the shift in chip dominance doesn't happen in a vacuum. It forces allied nations to react, leading to some incredibly complex geopolitical knots.
The ripple effects are completely global, and they are putting nations whose economies rely on tech exports in a very, very difficult position.
Let's look at the PacSilica summit that just wrapped up in Washington and the CSIS report on allied export controls. South Korea is the prime example of a country caught right in the middle.
Yeah, they are in a tight spot.
The U.S. is aggressively pushing the MTCH Act, essentially telling its allies to enforce strict export controls and stop selling advanced tech to China. Yet at the exact same time, South Korea's semiconductor exports to China jumped 243% in May, yielding a $3.8 billion surplus. How does a country balance those competing forces?
Impartially speaking, they realistically can't. At least not smoothly. It is a massive clash between national security directives and economic reality. Supply chain resilience is a great talking point at a summit. But for a nation whose economic engine relies heavily on tech exports, turning off the tap to the world's largest buyer is essentially economic self-sabotage.
And the CSIS report points out a massive legal hurdle too, right?
Yes. While South Korea has robust laws to prevent corporate espionage and tech leaks, they simply do not have the legal mechanisms to enforce the kind of sweeping, politically driven embargoes the U.S. is asking for.
Wow.
It is a massive diplomatic and structural headache.
And the regulatory scramble isn't just international. Regulation is happening furiously inside China, too, specifically regarding those consumer robots.
Right.
The briefings note that on July 15th, new AI anthropomorphic rules take effect.
This is the government stepping in to manage the societal impact of the technology we discussed earlier.
Right. The new rules require strict algorithm audits and explicitly ban virtual lovers or romantic AI companions for minors,
right,
which directly impacts the deployment of those UbiTech U1 robots shipping in September. It's a fascinating dual approach. Sprint as fast as humanly possible to innovate the hardware and software, but maintain an incredibly tight grip on how it interacts with the public.
It is a deliberate approach. When you are deploying millions of highly capable entities that act, speak, and recognize emotion like a human, you are fundamentally altering social behavior. So they are regulating the behavioral output of the AI, not just the technical input.
Right. So pulling all these threads together, we are looking at an ecosystem that has cheap, powerful software models flooding the globe. We have rapid domestic funding bypassing traditional bottlenecks, consumer-ready humanoids scaling up for mass deployment, and a self-sufficient chip ecosystem built under the extreme pressure of global export controls.
I think we really have to return to the commentary provided in the sources by lawyer Kim Kyung-jin, because it distills the entire situation perfectly. The true competitive advantage we are analyzing today isn't just the technological gap, it is the institutional gap.
The institutional gap. Let's spend a minute on that, because it really feels like the underlying thesis of this entire stack of reports.
In many decentralized systems, you have distinct silos, right? Mm. You have innovators in one sector, financial markets in another, and regulators in a third.
Right.
And they often work at cross purposes. Innovators move fast, regulators take years to understand the technology, and capital flows based on fleeting market sentiment. The institutional gap refers to the ability to synchronize all of these domains.
Which is exactly what we're seeing here.
Exactly. We are seeing policy updates, IPO fast tracks on the STAR market, efficient algorithmic breakthroughs, and physical factory deployments of robots moving in lockstep within a matter of weeks.
Wow.
That level of top-down coordination accelerates the entire innovation cycle in a way that decentralized systems inherently struggle to match.
It brings us right back to that synchronized whole of society pivot. It's not just one company making a breakthrough. It's the entire infrastructure moving at once.
Absolutely.
Thank you for walking through this massive stack of intelligence with us today.
Oh, the pleasure was mine. It is a fascinating, pivotal moment to observe.
And for you listening, I want to leave you with a final thought to chew on. If we are indeed on the eve of AGI, as DeepSeek proclaimed. And highly capable, emotionally adaptive humanoids are now literal consumer products you can add to a digital shopping cart next to your groceries. How long will it be before interacting with an AI entity feels as mundane as turning on your smartphone? What happens to our social fabric when the line between a household appliance and a companion permanently blurs? Think about that. We'll catch you on the next deep dive.
This program is provided by Lawyer Kyungjin Kim.